My name is Pat Sibande. I'm the chairperson of this committee. Originally, I'm from Mpumalanga province. Therefore, I'll request my colleagues, members of this committee, to introduce themselves as well.
Limachero, I'm Mpumalanga Kemba, representing Mpumalanga.
Good morning, everybody. I'm Lisa Jacobs, representing the Free State.
Good morning, gentlemen. My name is Zola Mlenzana from the province of the Eastern Cape, member of this committee.
Thank you, Chair. Honorable members, let me first introduce myself. My name is Mbule Rochangana. I'm representing DG Thabane Zulu. He's not going to make it today. He was summoned by the minister to attend to some sanitation issues. Next to me, I have my colleague from SHRAM. He will introduce himself.
Good morning, Chairperson and members. My name is Brian Mohoro. I'm the CEO of Social Housing Regulatory Authority. Thank you.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Mili Lekaba, Assistant to the Director General.
Good morning, honorable members. My name is Pegin Konyane, also from the National Department of Human Settlements.
Thank you very much, Congress of Boys Only. Let me give this opportunity to the staff.
Morning, everyone. Shoaib Dineshan, Content Advisor to the Committee.
Morning, everyone. Pilot Gwen, Committee.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Temba Kupula from Parliamentary Communication Services.
Morning, I'm
Claudine.
I'm Communication.
Morning, I'm Eve. I'm from PMG.
Good morning, members and the department. I'm Siavama Mwanaze from the New Age.
Thank you very much. I think we introduce ourselves. My comment is that I've received a few apologies. Some of the members of this committee are still committed somewhere that want to join us maybe later on. Umama Mapinja. No, Honourable Member Grunewald, they are going to join us a little bit later. But nevertheless, let's give this opportunity to the department to introduce itself. To commence, starting to give them the responsibility of the day.
Thank you, Chair. Let me just restate the point again that I'm representing DG Thabane, and my portfolio in the department is Program and Project Management Unit, and this kind of work falls squarely under my division. So I will be able to respond to any question that is directed to the work of the department, and I'll be assisted by my colleagues next to me. The CFO, Chief Financial Officer, Funani Matlasi, is busy managing the performance, the financial performance of the provinces. She's visiting all the provinces this week and next week, and the CEO couldn't make it today. So we do have some ladies in the executive management team. I'm the only one who's representing the EXCO today. Without wasting time, we want to go straight to the business of today. And this is about presenting progress on outcome 8, program of action. And the structure of my presentation, these are the areas that I'm going to cover, the objective of outcome 8. just to remind ourselves what Outcome 8 is about, the outputs and target sets, progress to date. These are the areas that I'm going to cover. In terms of progress to date, we will look at the upgrading of informal settlements targets. How are we doing here? That's the question that we'll be asking ourselves. National support program, which is NASP. How is NASP performing? The well-located rental accommodation, which is the responsibility of the CEO of SHRA. The accreditation of municipalities, efficient utilization of land for human settlements. And the last one will be the improved property markets. These are the outputs of Outcome 8. These are the areas that we contracted to do in 2010. In terms of the actual targets, we contracted to deliver 400,000 services, to deliver services to 400,000 households in informal settlements. And the intention was to make sure that these 400,000 households, they have access to security of tenure and to basic services. And then the implementation of the national support program, here we targeted to upgrade informal settlements in 49 municipalities. That was the 5-year target. To target 49 municipalities and upgrade the informal settlements in those 49 municipalities using technical support grants that we've received from Treasury. In terms of the well-located land, the target here that we set for ourselves was 80,000 well-located and affordable rental accommodation, which is linked to the declaration of restructuring zones. We're not building rental accommodation everywhere. We build rental accommodation in restructuring zones. And these are areas that are well located, close to transport amenities, and which make it easy for people to commute. Accreditation of 27 municipalities to undertake human settlements. Here we're talking about level 1, level 2, and level 3 accreditations. You'll recall that in terms of the Housing Act, we had 3 levels of accreditation. And the question is, how are we doing in accrediting these municipalities at various levels? Efficient utilization of state land for human settlements development. We set ourselves a target here as well of about 6,250 hectares of land that had to be released for human settlements. And again, I'm going to report on how we're doing in terms of reaching that target. Improved property market. Here the intention was to make sure that the mortgage default insurance scheme is in place so that we can do what most banks refer to as risk sharing arrangement between government and the private sector, because the lending of loans is the business of the private banks and DFIs. The finance linked individual subsidy, this is one policy that is intended to help provide relief or subsidize housing in the affordable housing space, that is the income group between 3.5 and 15,000. And again, we'll report on this. The policy is in place, it was reviewed, and it was approved on the 1st of April last year. We'll come back to this. We'll also look at the loans granted by the DFIs, what we refer to as development finance institutions. These are government-owned finance institutions. It's your SHRA, your NHFC, and others. So we set ourselves all of these targets, and today we want to report on how we are doing in achieving these targets. What we then did, because the grant in this sector is dispersed to provinces and to various entities, so we asked the minister to sign delivery agreements with the MECs, because the MECs are responsible for the implementation of the grant. So the service delivery agreement was signed between the national minister and the MECs, between the national DGs and the AGODs of various provinces, so that we can hold each other accountable where performance is not forthcoming. We signed a deliberate agreement to achieve the 400,000 households targets. Targets and budget amounts for each financial year are contained in the provincial business plan and municipal built environment plan. So there are two grants that we used to achieve the 400,000 targets, and that is the Urban Settlements Development Grant and the Human Settlements Development Grant. The Urban Settlements Development Grant is administered by municipalities. The Human Settlements Development Grant is administered by metros. So we use that grant, and we use the programs. We already have a number of programs in housing or in human settlements that are used to assist in the upgrading of informal settlements. One of them is what we always refer to as YSP, the Upgrading of Informal Settlements Program. We can also use the Integrated Residential Development Program, what we call IRDP. There's also People Housing Process Projects, where you have people who have received those, what we used to call the consolidation subsidies. And they have ovens and they have sites, and some can build houses for themselves, and others may form themselves into an association, which we call PHP Association. The Rural Housing Program and Emergency Housing Program. This is intended to give you an idea of the programs that we use to achieve the targets that we have set for ourselves and the budget that we have at our disposal. I've already talked about the Human Settlements Development Grant. I've talked about the Urban Settlements Development Grant. But we also use MINC. In most municipalities outside the 8 metropolitan centers, the infrastructure grant that is used for upgrading of informal settlements is the MIG. We also have what is called RIC, the Rural Housing Development Grant, that is RIC, and this is the grant that goes to rural households for sanitation. And municipalities and metropolitan municipalities in particular, they do have their own revenue that they use for upgrading of informal settlements or the provision of basic services. Again, this is the background, the context, so that we understand how we arrive at achieving those targets and which sources of funding do we use, the contracting arrangement with the provinces, which programs do we use to achieve the projects that the targets that we set for ourselves. So the performance comprises of forms of assistance that improve the lives of residents in informal settlements through access to basic services such as water, sanitation, electricity, refuse removal, and access to roads. So when we formalize an informal settlement, these are the things that we deal with. We put roads, we put refuse removal, we put electricity, we put sanitation. And one of the programs that help us to do this is the upgrading of informal settlements program, which takes up a substantial portion of the Human Settlements Development Grant. We also use, in some instances, where you have a mix of informal settlements program, what we call the brownfield program, and the greenfield program, we tend to use the IRDP, the Integrated Residential Development Program, because you have a greenfield project and you have a brownfield project. The greenfield is where you have a piece of raw land, and the brownfield is where you have informal settlements. So if you're using both portions of land, the best tool that we normally use is the Integrated Residential Development Program. And this part of it is about the in-situ upgrading. Security of tenure, there are various forms of security of tenure. Once we start upgrading in informal settlements, various forms of tenure get started. It's just to acknowledge that the informal settlement is upgradable where it is, because not all informal settlements are upgradable. You know, some informal settlements are in hazardous areas. But where an informal settlement is upgradable, and we have done the geotechnical evaluations, and we convinced that it is upgradable, then immediately the security of tenure kicks in. We're not talking about a higher level of security of tenure, we're talking about the basic security of tenure. This is assuring the beneficiaries that they are not going to be moved. They are going to be upgraded where they reside and where they are. And we will use various stages of upgrading the particular informal settlement. Now, how are we looking in terms of the numbers? As of the 30th of September 2013, in terms of this target, the upgrading of informal settlements, we have delivered services to 263,989 households, and this is only about services. We need to qualify. This is not about the top structure that we deliver in informal settlement. I'm talking about the top structure. I'm referring to a house. We're talking about services here, basic services. So we delivered 263,000. We delivered to 263,989 households, and that represents 65.9% of the 2014 target. And the 2014 target is 400,000. So, as of the 30th of September, if you talk about basic services, we are sitting at 65.9%. Over the same period, provinces delivered 259 formal housing units to the households. In the very same informal settlements, we've delivered houses, top structures there, to the tune of 205,000. We estimated 123,143 constructed on newly served sites. Now, this distinction is important for accounting purposes, so that we don't run into trouble with the Auditor General. The reason why we're separating all of these figures, somebody would ask, why are you splitting and upgrading of informal settlements? You should be able to cover everything. The Auditor General is more concerned about where you have put the money, where you have spent the money. So if we tell the Auditor General that we have delivered these services, they will be able to go and audit this, and they will be able to go and see those houses, because all of these things are there. Houses that have spent money on these houses and on these services. Now, if you combine both the top structures and with the services that we have provided in all of these areas, then you would be able to say that 382,915 households have received services over the last 4 years. Remember, we started the program in 2010. It was a 5-year program. We should have started it in 2009, but there was a 1-year delay, so we started it in 2010. So 382,000 households have been targeted, and we've delivered services, including top structures, to 382,915 households, and this represents 95.7% of the 2014 target, and that is the 400,000 that we talked about. Remember, our target in informal areas is 400,000. This is what the National Minister and the President contracted to do in 2009, that we will deliver services to 400,000 households. So currently, in terms of this particular target, we're sitting at 95.7%. Now, the next question is, how are provinces performing? Because all of this is work that is done by provinces. Individual provinces are spending money to help us to achieve the national target. This is not the national department that build houses, that delivers the money is dispersed to provinces. If you look at the Eastern Cape in terms of the upgrading of informal settlements targets, including USDG, I need to stress this point. Here we include the Urban Settlements Development Grant, which was initiated in 2010, June, July of 2010. And this is significant because the Urban Settlements Development Grant is about 8 billion rand. It's 8 billion rand per annum that is dispersed to the metropolitan municipalities. And the Human Settlements Development Grant is about 16 billion rand. So these are the two big sources of funding that we use for upgrading of informal settlements. Eastern Cape, their target and their contribution, what they contracted to do in 2009, is to deliver 59,440 households. The delivery to date, as of the 30th of September, they were sitting at 38,222, which represents 64.3%, and that excludes the top structure. We still keep that separation so that we don't run into trouble with the Auditor General. So if you're talking about basic services only that have been delivered to households Eastern Cape, end of September, they were sitting at 18,222, and that is 64.3%. If you include the 12 structures, then the Eastern Cape is sitting at 51,821, and that represents 87.2% of the national target, sorry, of the 59,440 target. So which tells you that they're not doing badly at all. They're sitting at 87.2%. The Free State, they contracted to contribute 26,400 into the 400,000 national target. The total delivery as of the 30th of September, it was 24,475. And the percentage of the target, and that is 92.7%. But if you include the 12 structures, it means the Free State has already gone beyond what they have contracted to do. We had a long discussion at Technocrats, at Technical Unit, about whether the Free State is in under target and overachieve its target. But they defended their position by saying that their budget is not as big as the budget of Gauteng. Gauteng has a budget of 4 billion rands. The Free State, they have a budget of about 1.1, 1.2 billion. So it doesn't make sense to over-target in terms of BC services and talk structures in informal settlements. Gauteng, they've got a lion's share here. They have 25% of the grant. The entire 16 billion rands of the housing grant goes to Gauteng. And if you include the metros, almost more than 82% of the national grant goes to Gauteng. Because you have three metropolitan municipalities there. They targeted to achieve 96,760, and they have done 63,810 in terms of basic services. That's the 20 of tenure, and they were sitting at 65.9%. And if you include the top structures, they have done 102,277, and this represents 105%. The former AGOT of Gauteng was very adamant from the word go that this target is very achievable. In fact, the national target that we set for ourselves in informal settlements is easily achievable, and you don't have to rocket science to know that, because if you have targeted 400,000 households and you disperse 28 billion rand per annum, it's very easy to achieve that target, especially if you consider the fact that we deliver most of our services to informal settlements, various forms of services to informal settlements. So it was not necessarily a difficult target to achieve, according to the former AGOT of Gauteng, who is now the CEO of NHBRC. KZN, 78,200, that is the target. I must say that KZN is performing very well this year. They're doing very well in terms of the top structure and housing, and they're spending their budget very well. A lot of other provinces are struggling right now, but we'll come back to that, as to which provinces are struggling. 30th of September, they've done 39,279, and they were sitting at 50.2%. And if you include the top structures, they are now sitting at 75.8%. I'm not going to take you through all of them. I think we can come back to the slide. This is just intended to indicate to you how provinces have performed to help us as a country to achieve the 400,000 target that we have set for ourselves. We can come back to this. Now, the National Upgrading Support Program, this is a program that National Treasury is extremely passionate about. And it's not difficult to know why, because we have more than 2,700 informal settlements in the country. A lot of informal settlements have been a vision of the global phenomenon. We've seen it in most you can't fight a demolition. And the fact that you get a number of informal settlements in urban areas, this is just an indication of what is happening. not only in South Africa but in the world. People are moving away from rural areas to urban air centers, looking for job opportunities, and struggling to find accommodation, and not trying to justify the much removal of informal settlements, but it's happening all over the world. All what we are expected to do as government is to provide the services where people are, instead of investing time and energy and approaching informal settlements. And by the way, there are processes that need to be followed when you decide to uproot or to evict those who have invaded a piece of land and areas. So our constitutional democracy, when people invade land, then the PIE Act kicks in so that there are no illegal evictions. In the past, we used to have a lot of illegal evictions in this country. Those are things of the past now. So the upgrading support program, this is intended to assist municipalities to put processes in place to upgrade informal settlements. If you are building a housing program or you're developing a housing program in a greenfield project, that is a project where you have a piece of raw land, it takes you approximately 3 to 4 years to upgrade or to build, to develop a housing program in a greenfield arrangement. Your planning processes, they take more than 36 months, and most of these planning issues are statutory processes. You have to give communities an opportunity to object. But if it's a brownfield project, it will not take you less than 10 years to upgrade an informal settlement. I always make examples about Kailicha, Site C, Site B, some of the informal settlements. If you take a picture of Site C or Site B in Kailicha, in 1984, because I think Site C and Site B area started in 1984, and you look at another picture in 1994, and you look at another picture in 2004, and you look at another picture in 2012, you will see what we call the in-situ upgrading in action. It takes a lot of time because you have to negotiate with communities. And some of the beneficiaries don't qualify because they have had houses elsewhere. And some of the people who stay in those informal settlements are not South African. So you're not going to give them a South African housing subsidy. So in upgrading an informal settlement, you take a lot of time and a lot of expertise that is required to manage all of that. The starting point is to first count the dwellings that are there. You have to look at those dwellings. The second point is to understand the number of beneficiaries who qualify. We have to do what we call the enumeration. Count every dwelling and count every beneficiary in every informal settlement. Then you do your feasibility, your geotech analysis, to check whether this particular informal settlement is upgradable. All of those things, they take not less than 10 years to complete an upgrading of informal settlements, which is why we created this program to support municipalities to upgrade the informal settlements. You can see some of them. I use Site C because you can see Site C now, almost all of it, I would say 70% of it now, is already upgraded. You have houses if you drive next to them too. And that is because the upgrading of informal settlements program then worked. We also use the PHP program to build the top structures. So we took a conscious decision to say we'll target the 49 urban centers because that's where the majority of these informal settlements are, in the 49 centers. And I'll tell you where we are in terms of the targets. We have Buffalo City, where we targeted, which is 6 settlements. In Buffalo City is London. And we targeted a number of informal settlements there. And we have our teams, the consulting teams. We have departmental officials there managing those professionals who are assisting us with the upgrading of that particular informal settlement. We have Eastern Cape, Free State, Gauteng. I won't list all of them. You can read them yourself. KZN, Mpopo, Mpumalanga, Northern Cape, Western Cape. We have targeted almost all your big and medium-sized cities, because that's where the majority of these informal settlements are. all your provincial seminary towns have been targeted, your provincial capital has been targeted, and other small towns. Now the question is, where are we in terms of this particular target? We sitting at 55, we targeted 55, we're sitting at 35 municipalities that are receiving support from the National Upgrading Support Program. And the target is 49. And I'm quite positive that we will be able to reach that target before the end of the financial year. And the third target that we have set for ourselves, and that talks more to my colleague, it's on the left, and this is about increasing the provision of wellness and rental accommodation. Here, the target was to deliver 80,000 rental opportunities, or target 80,000 rental units. As of the 30th of September, we've delivered 30,020 units. And that means that we're not doing very well here. The biggest challenge here in this space, and I'm sure my colleague is going to come and talk about this question, the biggest challenge here is that first and foremost is the funding mix. That is a little bit problematic. When I'm saying funding mix, we fund this program from the grant, the capital grant, from national, the institutional, from the provinces, the provincial allocation. He manages the capital grant, or what we call the restructuring capital grant. You also get the funding from the private sector, or from the development finance institutions. And it's extremely complicated to package a social housing program. And it means that you need to make sure that you have all the funding in the world. What we picked up when we set this target in 2009, we didn't do a reality check of asking ourselves whether the existing allocation or the existing budget, is it going to help us to achieve what we want to achieve? I don't think we will be able to meet this one. I'm the first one to admit. I don't think we'll achieve this target, but we'll get very close to 80,000. But we will not meet this target, precisely because of the funding constraints associated with funding social housing or rental housing programs in general. But this is, if you pardon my language, this is the sexiest program that we are managing. If you go all over the country and you will see most of these three-story, four-story, five-story, even six-story apartments, and you'll think that this has nothing to do with government, and this has nothing to do with the Department of Housing. These are the programs and the rental stock that we are delivering throughout the country. Here in the Western Cape, we have one in Brooklyn, which is called Dromedaries, and there's another one in Steinbeck, there's another one in Eastern Cape, Emerald Sky, that's his project in Port Elizabeth. We've got Warmer Links in Gauteng, we have Flairhof. These are all triple, four, or even in some cases, eight-story apartments in Jabulani, in Soweto. This is the rental stock that we are creating for people who are in that category between 1,500 and up to 7,500 income bracket. Because some of the people are not willing to own, they want to rent, but we also have what is called rent to buy. This is where people rent so that they can build up their credit record and they can afford to buy. Because a lot of our people, especially in that income bracket, 1,500 to 7,500, they are highly indebted. If you look at the figures of the non-performing loan book in most banks, you find that this is the market that the bank is not attending to, which is why we're coming up with all of these instruments to incentivize the bank to lend to this category. So when we deal with affordable housing, we deal both with affordable home ownership and affordable rental, because some people want to rent before they get to buy so that they can build the credit level. So here, the target was 80,000, and we're sitting now at 59.4% of the national target, which is 80,000. We include the urban settlement development grant, which has delivered about 7,189 units. That is why this figure jumps from 33 to 47. You want to break it by province, you can see Eastern Cape, total delivery is 3,000, which is 25% of what they projected to achieve. It's the Western Cape, Gauteng, and KZN, they're getting a big share of people are looking for another population. There are more people in Gauteng, KZN, and the Western Cape are looking for another accommodation. Some of them are inspectors, and these are people, some of them who don't qualify for the free housing program or the free housing subsidy program. Gauteng is at 55%, that's where the volumes are. KZN is at 66%. The Western Cape is at 95.8%. The Western Cape, they have a big CRU program as well. CRU is a community residential unit program that they are running here, and that's what makes them look good. So we're sitting at, if you look at the country as a whole, we're sitting at 46% of the national target. And I've made these comments to my colleagues that it's going to be extremely difficult to achieve this target. Well-located, affordable rental accommodation. I think we've already part of this. I won't repeat it. So structuring zones approved because we're building rental accommodation in the structuring zones. Accreditation of municipalities, performance to date. We targeted to accredit 8 municipalities for level 1. To date, we targeted to 24 municipalities, 7 municipalities. We've done 8 municipalities for level 1. We've done 8 metropolitan districts for level 2, and those are Mangaung, Buffalo City, City of Cape Town, North Mandela Metro, Ekurhuleni, Tshwane, Joburg Metro, and Ekurhuleni. Those are the municipalities that have been targeted, metropolitan municipalities that have been targeted for level 2. We also have 12 other municipalities, district municipalities that have been given level 2 status, and these will be Rustenburg and others, other districts. I think it's not this part in the Northern Cape. Yes. Then we've signed implementation protocols with 24 municipalities, and these are 24 municipalities that have received level 2 accreditation. That is the 12 plus 8 and plus 4. The implementation protocol, what they do, they help us to enter into a contractual arrangement with these municipalities to act as implementing housing implementing entities. Before you get to accredit them or assign them to level 3, where they become fully fledged housing development entities, they perform the same function that provinces are performing, but they will only be able to perform those functions that provinces are performing once they have been assigned or given what we used to call level 3, and now we call it assignment framework. The 8 metropolitan municipalities, or rather the 6, not 8, because we exclude Buffalo City and Mangaung. The 6 metropolitan municipalities, they have been assessed for level 3 accreditation. I'm sure you've listened to, you've heard the Minister of Finance in his mini-budget speech talking about assigning the 6 metropolitan municipalities by July next year. And that is the program that we are managing, that by July next year we are expected, the Minister will have to satisfy herself and go present to Cabinet and satisfy Cabinet that these 6 municipalities can now act as fully fledged housing entities, which means that we will deliver and disperse the housing grant directly to all the housing entities. Currently, we're only delivering and dispersing the urban settlement development grant. An executive assignment will be done, that is where the premiers of the province, in consultation with the MECs, will then sign or assign the accreditation to the 6 metropolitan municipalities. once they have satisfied themselves and once the national minister has satisfied herself that everything is in order. This is one target that we have exceeded, and this is the delivery of land for human settlements development, the release of land for human settlements development. The actual target to date, you recall that we targeted to deliver 6,250 hectares, release 6,250 hectares, and the CEO of HDA keeps claiming his bonus, that he has exceeded the target, so he needs to get his bonus. And I always tell him that I think we have under-targeted, yes. So maybe we need to review your target. But we have done well in terms of this target. We have 278,497 hectares of land. They have been identified for assessment. 80,984 hectares have been assessed for suitability for human settlements development. 7,587.4 hectares of well-located land has been released to the Free State, to Gauteng, to KZN, to Limpopo and Northwest. And the figure that we're talking about, when we account for performance, we're looking at that figure, 7,587. The other numbers, they're only intended to tell you what we are doing in other areas. So you can see that we just exceeded the 6,000 target. We're sitting at 7,587.4 hectares of land. And this land will have to be released for human settlements, land tenure, breeding, gap markets, and that's basically what the land is all about. There's also private land, privately owned land, which has been acquired, and there we're talking about 10,218 hectares. But this is the land, you know, that we haven't done anything, we haven't done any planning, it's just it has to be converted. In fact, one wanted to combine that because it's not 100% private. In most cases, it's a state-owned enterprise land, like the Denel piece of land here in the Western Cape, Transnet piece of land. But the negotiations still have to be concluded. We've done feasibility and everything to check the suitability of the land, forward planning, funding arrangement, and all of those things. The CEO of HDA, in fact, we'll be submitting a proposal to the department as to how to deal with some of these parcels of land next week. The efficient utilization of land for human settlements development, the actual delivery, I think I've already touched on this, that the Limpopo Free State, Northern Cape, those are some of the provinces that we have targeted for support by the agency. We use the HDA to package this land. That's what the entity was formed for. It's their mandate to help us to acquire land, both publicly owned and privately owned land. There are challenges. I'm not going to bore you with all of those challenges, like capital funding for acquisition. Some of the land is extremely expensive to acquire. Another piece of land is extremely expensive for us as well. There's a lot of questions that people asking as to whether it is worth it to buy it, given that we also need to do some rehabilitation. In fact, it's going to cost us about 50 million rands to rehabilitate the land. And we recall that this used to be a testing ground for the Denel. That's where they used to test all the armor and equipment. So we may find that there are some bombs there that is not detonated. So there's a lot of rehabilitation work that needs to be done in some areas, and we don't have all the funding in the world to cover that. This is another target where we haven't done well as a country, as a sector. And it should not be surprising because the property market is not doing well. This is a reflection of what is happening in the market. There are a few countries where property market is performing well. And again, the credit market as well are also not performing well, especially in the this might have got to our target. I think it would have been a surprise for us to achieve the 600,000 target that we have set for ourselves. We contracted to do 600,000 to provide 600,000 loans to this particular market, the gap housing market. There are quite a number of hiccups associated with this. One of them is the fact that the MDI is not in place. The MDI is the Mortgage Default Insurance Scheme, which is intended to incentivize the banks to lend more in this market, even though there are pros and cons about whether the MDI is a good instrument. But most banks, they feel that it will help to crowd in private sector investments, because you're talking about risk sharing here. Government is sharing the risk, the private sector is also sharing the risk. But Treasury is still working on the model. They were not comfortable with the model that has been proposed. There is an outstanding meeting, in fact, I think it's today, if my memory serves me well, between the National Minister of Finance and the Minister of Human Settlements to discuss this particular scheme as well. Because without this scheme, it's going to be difficult to crowd in more private sector and private bank investment. The good thing is that all the banks have signed up with the NHFC on FLISP, what we call the Finance Linked Individual Subsidy Program. All the four big banks, like NetBank, ABSA, FNB, and Standard Bank, they've signed with the NHFC to show the commitment to lend in this particular market. Again, the challenge is the high level of debt that most households in this particular market have to, you know, to deal with. It's extremely difficult to loan households in this market because of the level of exposure, risk exposure, and all of that. We're not doing well. We targeted 600,000, and I think we're sitting currently. I'll show you exactly where we are. I've got a table that talks to that. But what we've done, we've revised the policy. We contracted to revise the policy because it didn't work. The finance-linked individual subsidy program policy didn't perform. So we changed the instruments. The banks came back to us and they told us that we need to tweak what we call the preemptive right clause. Because we're saying to the banks, please invest more money into this space, but we then say beneficiaries, when they decide to sell the house, they're not allowed to sell the house. They must bring it back to government. And most banks thought that it's unfair that you're asking the banks to put more money. Government is not putting much subsidy here except the 86,000. And then the banks, if you're talking about 250,000 rand property, it means that the banks or the private funders are the biggest investors in this space. You can't then say the individuals who are getting these loans are not allowed to sell the house to anybody else except government. They must bring it back to government. So that tool doesn't work well for the banks, and they were very worried about it. And they made a recommendation that we need to review the preemptive rights clause. There is absolutely nothing wrong with the preemptive rights clause. It was intended to make sure that we protect the government's investment in the past, but it works well in areas where government is 100% invested. So there's nobody else who's invested in that particular property. But if you get into an arrangement with private investors, then you need to think about how you package the preemptive rights clause. In Brazil, they don't have the preemptive rights clause. If you look at the Brazilian model, they allow the beneficiaries to sell the property. But what they ask is for the beneficiary to pay back what belongs to government, and they do it in a very symbolic way. And if you sell, after 2 years, you pay a certain portion. If you sell after 4 years, you pay a certain portion. If you sell after 8 years, you pay a very symbolic portion. And the intention is to make sure that this market performs as well, because currently it hasn't performed. 25% of the residential property market in this country is subsidized housing. But that market is not performing. People are selling, but they're selling in black market because they don't know how to sell because of all of the constraints associated with it. And in some instances, we pay 106,000 rand to build an RDP house. and it gets sold at 10,000 rand or 20,000 rand. So it's not realizing its value. So there are many things that we need to do to get this market right, because it is a property market. When you give somebody a house, a two-bedroom house, you're giving that person an asset. So that asset must perform. But if you have all sorts of constraints, it's not going to perform the way you want it to perform. Besides, the administration of the preemptive rights clause is a nightmare for government. It's extremely difficult for government to enforce that clause because we don't have all the mechanisms and the instruments in place to enforce it. And what compounds the problem is also the conveyancing arrangement in this space, that when you want to sell or buy, you go through all of those hurdles. I think it's difficult to do conveyancing for us, people who are outside this market. The question is how much more for people who are in the 15,000 and below market. But that's a discussion for another day. So the long and short of it is that this is one target that hasn't performed well for us as government. And this mirrors what is happening in the economy of the country. The economy is not performing. Property market is not performing. The level of indebtedness in this particular market is huge. Household debt is high. The minister has talked about it. So we haven't done well in terms of output four, which is the improved property market. Another target that falls part of output four is the rationalization of the development finance position. We contracted to deliver one housing financial institution. Right now we have NHFC, the National Housing Finance Corporation, we have SHRA is the regulator. Yes, part of it is about loan funding, yes. We have NHFC, we have RALF, which is the Rural Housing Loan Finance Scheme. We took a decision to amalgamate all of the cabinet to resolve that we need to form one housing development finance institution. And that process is underway. We're busy with due diligence and we will deliver on this target. We may not meet the target, but we will be able to get at least all the basic work done, the legislation that needs to inform that process, including competence. So all in all, we haven't done well. If you want to break it by DFI, the contributions of the DFI into this, they are their own target in terms of this output form. You take NHFC, they have delivered 1,938 loans, mortgage loans, and this represents almost 100% of what they targeted to achieve themselves, their own contribution. Incremental loans, they have delivered 12,968 of those, and that represents 51%. The wholesale funding loans, the number has got different loan categories that are funding this particular market. They have delivered 26,068%. The leveraging, this is about matching funding. They have delivered 35,616 loans. I think they've done well here on this one. RALF has delivered 150,543 loans. RALF is the Rural Housing Loan Finance Scheme, one of the DFIs. They've delivered 150,000 loans, and they're providing these loans to rural households for people to build houses for themselves. They're sitting at 82%. Nature targets, in most cases, the emerging contractors who are doing business in this particular space, in this market, in the housing market. And they have delivered 8,357 loans. This is between the period 2010 up to now, and that represents 75.7%. This is the contribution of the DFI, the housing financial institution. We have not included the private institutions. So if you combine all the DFIs that delivered 236,000 loans, the banks, they have delivered 94,772 loans between 2010 and now. The employer-assisted housing, these are institutions like mine, who have assisted their own employees So this excludes government, local and other employees who have a subsidy program in government, but it may be outside our target market, which is 50,000. We have not included it. That gives us a total figure of 331,679, which represents 55.3% of the 5-year target that we've set for ourselves. The 5-year target is 600,000. So we're sitting at 55.3%. You can see this is a very difficult market, and this is a very difficult target to achieve. And again, I stress the point that if we're not performing here, it is because the economy is also not doing well, and the target market that we deliver to is also a very difficult target market. The number of debt is huge, and this is not necessarily trying to underscore the fact that we have not performed. We set ourselves a target, and we haven't achieved it, and one has to account for it. But one needs to understand the context as well, that the economy also not doing well. And that concludes the story about outcome 8, looking at all the 4 outputs. We have 4 outputs. One is the housing, the upgrading of informal settlements. Second one is rental housing. And the third one is land acquisition. And the fourth one is affordable, improved property markets. And conclude my discussion and take questions, not unless my colleague wants to add something. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much. Any addition?
No.
Honourable members, this is an opportunity for you to start maybe to ask questions or start seeking. I'll start this side, my Temba. Followed by Honourable Jacobs, followed by Honourable Nizana.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you for the presentation. I'll start on slide number 22. To me, it's interesting to hear that there are employers who assisted in housing loans or housing, whatever. But it would actually help us as members, as public reps, to understand which are those companies. For example, if we stand in front of the people talking about, those who are really taking part in making sure that the South Africans and especially previously disadvantaged are being assisted. So those employers, maybe the companies, for us it doesn't really mean anything if it's employer assisted housing. I don't know who are those. So if you can just clarify for us. Before we even came to the slide, when you started, you spoke of loans that were granted. And then I had a question there to say, if you can break down, and I know you don't have time now, you won't get the details, but if you can understand per province and also women, we all know that women were previously disadvantaged and women couldn't even get a loan. Those single women who wanted to have houses before, previously the apartheid era. If you can see by now, in the present human settlement, we've got so many women who are now saying, this is my house. And if you can give us breakdown. Chairperson, the presenter, when he started, he said women, they've got somewhere, but now when he was still presenting, when he was presenting, then another gentleman came in. So when they go out to go to this, they say, okay, we're going to the select committee. We must look as handsome as we can. Let me say, you don't look handsome if there is no woman there. You can put ties on, you can put suits on, but if there, you don't have a woman amongst you, we don't see you. So break down the problems, if we can just get how has women benefited from the loans, and now that they by chance to fuga kokuthi I have been assisted. I've got my own house. And then there is the grant dispersed to provinces. My question on those more that is, what mechanisms do you use to monitor the implementation in the provinces? And if maybe there's a reporting mechanism, how many times does the provinces report back, so that you have that? And I would say it is important to communicate with this committee on a regular basis. Even if we don't call you, it is important that we have that information. You take a phone, 10% through the secretary, can we say, we would like to send this information to you, so that this can actually assist us when we do our constituency work. Informal settlement. Last week we were at Tshwane. I think you heard the select the NCOP in Soshanguve. We visited an informal settlement called Orange Farm. Can you maybe, tell us how far is Orange Farm on the map, or in line with your program? They are nice. Those checks, they are beautiful. But those people there, they say they have long been there, and they need houses. There's one gentleman who even said he started making his own bricks, putting trying to build a house, and he was stopped. But how do you assist such? Thank you, Chairperson.
I hinted, Mama, I didn't want to go deeper to say this is Congress of Boys only, Kobo.
Yes.
Kobo. Mm. And we took it seriously because we appealed from you, Noga, that we don't like this. We are not happy about this. We are not happy at all. Because it means that we are just talking to the rocks. And they wanted to see how we're going to respond to this. Maybe what they are testing us. Mm-hmm. And is there in the Constitution? Those who are saying, they want to be careful. And Dr. Jacobs?
It's GT. I don't know which province is there.
Thanks, Chair. And thanks for the presentation. Chair, the issue of human settlement is a problematic area. I don't know whether we'll ever be able to give each and every South African a house. Because there are so many people who need houses, and there's that movement from rural areas to urban areas. I think it needs a well-oiled machinery
to make a follow-up on what Honorable Temba said. We had visited Winterfeld. And if you remember, Winterfeld is an area where there were plots. And we were told that the municipalities have expropriated the land. And there's a dispute between the municipality and the plot owners. So I know that they're not satisfied with the money that they have been given. But the problem that we have, it is the planning which is there. I don't think there is a proper planning on how to deal with the land that is there. For instance, houses, it's built next to a mud house. And now, instead of the owner of the mud house getting a house, somebody from another area just come in and occupy that house. Whereas the person next who's living in the mud does not occupy that house. It's causing a lot of problems in that area. Because I think what needs to be done, it should go in phases. There must be phases. People from, because if you take somebody from that area, another one from that area, we are not solving the problem. Because immediately you take that person, the other one occupies that space where this person is left. So we are not dealing with any problem if we do like that. But maybe if we do in phases where we target a certain area, we remove all of them and put them in houses and develop the new area, and you move in such phases, maybe that could help. But the problem which is there, it's going to cause a lot of problems. Seemingly, there's no proper planning from Zara municipality. And you said you have accredited the metros. I don't know how do you monitor what is going on in metros. Because if you are accredited, then it means they'll do as they like by not following proper systems or of procedures. The other one that I here you mentioned that in the Free State so many municipalities, what. But you don't give us towns. Look, we are going for elections. So what we have achieved, we need to be specific. To say in the Free State, it is in this town, in this area, where this delivery is taking place. For instance, you are talking also about the removal of informal settlement. Which are those informal settlements in the Free State? Because I don't know them. I just say the Free State, the informal settlement. So I need to have that kind of, and all of us, we need to have that kind of information. So that when we go there, we are able to say, this is what we have done in this area. And so many. For instance, you say, under this national upgrading support program, you say there are 6 municipalities in the Free State. You say categorization and mapping underway in 6 municipalities. I don't know those areas. Formal settlement again, I don't know which areas in the Free State falls under that. But the other one is a question of accreditation. I think it's good we are moving in phases from metros and then we proceed to other municipalities. But I think we need to move with speed with that. I think it would be good that these municipalities must be able to build their own houses. We should try to move away on this issue of tenderism. Because even in the apartheid regime, municipalities were building the houses for themselves. And why can't we? Because it will be less problems and also would be also be economic on that. So I think we need to move with speed. The other one is the issue of rental and rental housing. And I'm just thinking aloud on this issue of rental housing, whether if we can build many of these rental houses, won't they ease the issue of informal settlement? Because these people, they come from urban areas, they come to town, and there is nowhere for them to stay. But if we have many of these rental houses, that's where maybe we can accommodate them. For instance, you say sometimes you find that others are staying in informal settlements because they have houses where they come from, and they the system cannot allow them to have another house. But if you have rental houses, they can be accommodated there, as well as maybe these people who come from outside. They can go there and rent. Maybe it's another option that we need. We need to fast track on that one. And then on the issue of land, that is, you have acquired land. You know, most of the people in our area are complaining that some people, they have money. All what they need is a site to build. But all the time, the land that is there is given for RDP houses. People who can buy a site and be able to build, they are not given that opportunity. And now, this land that you say you have targeted, are you leaving maybe a certain portion for people who can buy for themselves so that they are able to build? Because we are forcing even people who can build to go to the bank for a bond. And we know it's very expensive. But if a person has a land he can build, that's how we grew up. I remember staying in a two-room house. My father built a two-room. We stay there, but as time goes on, they would put three rooms until the whole house was complete. And people did not complain about the bond. But now what we are doing, we are forcing everybody to go to the bank to get a bond. Maybe as we have this land, we need to have a certain allocation for people who can buy sites for themselves. It's mainly in most of the township, people are crying about that, saying, no, we want them to build for ourselves, and we are not being given that opportunity. And also, you talked about the loans that have been given to certain people. And are there no defaulters? What happens if there are defaulters? Maybe you take them to court, and then from there they have to pay. Sometimes they have to vacate the houses that they have bonded, and then it goes back so that they become homeless again. They go to informal sector. If I can get a response to that. Thank you.
Honourable Member Mlenzane. Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, we will always have on our experience from last week's program. I had Honorable Temba, my own question, which is not exactly yours, around Orange Farm, my experience there. A term, Chairperson, was introduced to me. I wonder if Honorable Temba, because we were together, you captured a new term, let me say so, to me, formalization of informal settlement. They talk of a formalization process, and they define it. This formalization, Chairperson, means the design of that area, and it is well designed, I can tell you. Well designed,
well structured. You can say that it was on paper then. That's formalization in the true sense of the word. Allocation of stamp up to the level of issuing of title deed.
Mm-hmm.
I'll come back to that one of title deed, Chairperson. The putting on of shacks, very nice shacks, and electrification of such shacks. Proper electrification by ESCOM. I mean, all this is good. I'm not asking this with a negative kind of a... I learned, as I'm saying, it was a new experience. But now my question was, are you not perpetuating the circumstances that those people live under, where they would continuously and perpetually be under shacks because these shacks have been formalized, the area has been serviced, and all that. And to whom? How do you deal with, in the process of such formalization, where people begin to sell the very same title deed? They sell the title deed and go jump to another area to locate, because people do not want to stay in shacks. They want to stay in houses. So, Chair, I wanted to check on that. On slide 7, I will come back to both slide 6 and 7, but let me start with slide 7, check. Beyond the service level agreement which are signed between the department and the provinces and the municipalities, how does the national department control the implementation of this program? But when I'm talking control, Chair, because I believe this is your program, this goes down even to the level of prioritization. I'm asking this, Chair, because you would have provinces, if you look here on paper, provinces which have actually performed very, very well. But I'm saying to you, Chairperson, they have performed well on paper. But if you go out there and meet communities, it's a shame. Communities are desperate. Communities are crying out there. But on paper, houses have been developed. I don't want, because of this time is now volatile, Chairperson. I don't want to begin to mention provinces by name. But you would know. Chair, slide 6 and 7. That's where my interest was when you spoke of your target. Just to check, are these targets consistent with your approved strategic delivery plan of 2011-2014. Is there consistency? Because one would be worried if, Chair, these targets, which the department has performed so well, are inconsistent with the approved strategic delivery plan of 2011-2014. Chair, let me stop there. I'm looking at time. You allow us, we'll come back. I don't want to take everything now.
Thank you, Chair. I've just forgotten three issues. On the issue of accreditation of municipalities, you say they have to build houses. Do they also do the infrastructure?
and do they have that capacity to put the infrastructure? The other one, the problem that I know it is there in municipalities is the issue of a special planning, because they don't plan where they are going to put residential areas, and also it was a problem to declare a certain area a township with township boards. I don't know what is the situation now. How do you resolve that? Because I know it was a problem. Because if we have a special planning and we have identified areas where we will build houses, it won't become a problem when time comes to build houses. But now that was the problem. And here also, on this, where the figures, the target, for instance, the figure says 22,000 up to is 24,475. On this side, you say it's 36,000. What has happened? Because here they did not meet the target, but this side it is more. So where comes that difference? Where does it come from? Or there were extra stairs or sides that had to be incorporated, because you know it is the actual top structure, but this side it was not like that.
Thank you, Honourable Member. I said thank you to the Chief Department. You see, I wanted to make a follow-up on what was raised by my colleagues, but I'm confused where to start. I'll set an example. In slide number 2, there is something which is called bulletin, second bulletin from the last. Said efficient utilization of land for human settlement development. I wanted to find out whether do you still have a land? Where do you still have land? And where is it? And then also, on because if you, on slide number 3, you spoke about delivery. Of 80,000 well allocated, you gave us some of the backgrounds where have you done 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3. And then on slide number 4, what is worrying me, you gave us a plain marketer's output, input on bulletin number 4 about the various funding streams that to be used to utilize. The question is one, how do you reach the rural masses? Are they aware about these funds? Which do you have? Because it doesn't help to be a praise singer, to say da-da-da-da-da, when those things are not practical on the ground. Are the people knowing about this thing? How do you reach people? Because from your entire input, your focus is metros and cities. Most of the time you're talking about metros and cities. Never mentioned about rural areas and how do you reach rural areas. On slide number 5, you spoke about the security. What is this? Let me go to number 5. Security tenure. You see, it comes nearly to on what speaking about modifying informal segment. You know, there is a thing which is worrying me. I thought that human settlement was going to be in the position to assist us. I'll put an example. There are a lot of informal settlements which are situated in the wrong places, like in the wetland. Some are situated next to the railway station. Some are under pylons. For example, a few days ago, there was a white guy who was challenging the government that he must remove pylons because they go above his home, something like that is dangerous. And if such things can start now, how many pylons are going to be removed? While the people came, pylons came before, the people put themselves after. If you go to what we live Benoni, there is a section where they put themselves in a sinkhole, and now automatically also creating that it's another level which was supposed to, there are things which I can't talk with them now for security reasons. I must go to the minister to talk about them. Because they are challenging the government. They are using this, most of the people that we even debated about it, they are bringing themselves next to the old mines and put houses in formal settlement. How do you modify such thing? How can you improve such thing? Because it's a sinkhole. While the strategy is to come closer to the inlet so that they can go down and go to for illegal mining. While there are waterfalls that kill each other underground, it is reported like that that they're killing each other. And you must help us to audit to get exactly that how many those who are upgrading in a positive way. But myself, I'm a little concerned when I talk about this. And then on slide 6, VESA, slide number 21. You spoke about the number with the human settlement which delivered. And then you spoke about loans and grants on slide number 21. You see, my problem, okay. Welcome, Honourable Member Cronewald. I indicated that you'll join us later. Okay, fine. You see, why I'm raising this slide number 6 and slide number 21, you raise a concern about the issue of funding, the funding constraint, and also the rental units. See, to me, it is a contradiction. You raise a concern. That's why I wanted to ask that our grantee, is it sustainable? So that if it's sustainable, it can continue. If it's not sustainable, why do we continue if it's not sustainable? I'll put an example also. There is a thing which you propose, Honorable Member Jacobs, about some of this. Although I know that when I wanted to ask them, what is the relationship with COPTA? What is the relationship with COPTA? Because I know some people are using this to hide it. You raise, with Mama Temba and yourself, you raise some issues about this thing of Winterfeld. It's not Winterfeld alone. Let me remind you once more. Do you still remember the story of N2 Gateway here in Western Cape? For how long is it like this? For how long? And the Honourable Member Jacobs was suggesting that we build this house, but myself, I'm a little bit concerned, Honourable Jacobs. I don't know whether this N2 Gateway is being utilized in the fullest, because what I know in the past, a lot of blocks are still empty, because we can't encourage that, because it will be a fruitless and wasteful expenditure. And also go to Epi Dalem's known. The hostel which was converted to units. What's happening? Still empty for how many years? I can cite not to the example. You go to Standerton, the same. The hostel was converted. Mama Temba asked a question that whether you have a mechanism to control. Because it's very wrong to come to tell us about numbers and do this, but the question was, do you have a hand, upper hand? And it's not healthy for us. Every year we vote for budget. Why that budget is not controllable? You don't have any mechanism of controlling. You don't have any monitoring mechanism. And also, you spoke about the proper market credit. You see where there is slightly you complaining that people, you made an example that people are selling RDP houses for 10,000 and lower. That is illegal. Because you push us to ask you a question, how many houses are affected? And what legal steps have you taken in order to discipline them? Because we know it is alleged that some people, when you give them an RDP here, he will remove and go to the other informal settlement and sell this one. So, as long as your system doesn't talk to each other, forget on what you are doing. That's why then I wanted you to ask a question that about whether your system are able to talk to each other vice versa with the local government or with the quota. Because human settlement will push this budget, and this one will push for this budget. And then also, I wanted to ask what government wanted to achieve about these outcomes. Where is it achievable? Why I'm raising those things? Is that you told us about the concern about outcome four, which was never materialized. Not outcome four only. You said four, yes, I agree. But you never told us about an alternative, that if outcome four doesn't work, what alternative measures do you have in order to implement it correctly? So, because my concern is what? As long as, I repeat again, is your system doesn't talk it to each other with the local government. Local government will go this way, will go this way. As you correctly mentioned, that you are concerned about the issue of funding. The same way you're concerned about the issue of funding. But it's unfortunately, you raise an issue that you're concerned about the issue of funding, but you never told us about which stakeholders which are affected, which contribute in that negative way that makes you to raise a concern about it. So that very soon or later to make an amicable solution to approach each other about that one to assist each other. I'll rest my case there, give you an opportunity maybe to try to respond. Thank you. Over to the department.
Thank you, Chair. I've noted the modern comments, but others.
Or comments?
And questions.
You said comments, more than 50 comments.
And questions, most of them are questions.
You said, I'm sorry, this is the recording. You said you've noted more than 50 comments. That's what you said.
Yes, Chair.
Comments.
I'm saying you've commented on 50 items. Maybe let me put it differently.
No, let's come to this way.
I thought that
members are asking you questions, and then your response said you have noted more than 30 comments. To me, a comment is something, a question is something else.
The question, Chair. The question, I wanted to say 30 questions.
Okay.
That have been put forward on various items. I will respond to all of them, and my colleagues will assist me as well. I think the first one was about...
Sorry, before you respond. Honourable members, let me remind you, I don't say that we must open that. We're just putting you on par so that you can assist us. If you want us to go deeper, you can go deeper if you said comments. I'll cite an example. Do you still remember when we visited KZN? Those two rooms, RTP houses, those ones leaking and they don't have honeysuckle. We can go on and that if you go to this place, this and this, go this, because we're from the province. Therefore, over to
you then. Chair, let me just acknowledge the point that you're more on the ground and you know most of these things. And my colleagues were in social group as well last week. I didn't attend, but there were quite a number of input that was forwarded to the stakeholder management unit of the department to deal with some of the issues that came out of social group. But and most of the issues that have been raised here today are some of the challenges that we're grappling with in human settlements. There are areas where we're doing well, and there are areas where, as a sector, we're struggling. And I'm very open about it. I have no business to brush all of those issues aside, and I'll deal with them. The first question was about the employee assistance program. You wanted to know, which are those companies that are assisting their own employees. Here, we're only focusing on the mining companies. You are aware that Anglo-Plat, Impala, most of them are mining companies. That is the 644 that we're talking about. This is the employee assistance program that was done by the mining companies. There is a project that we launched more than 2 years ago with Impala, Latin America, company where they assisted most of their employees, and this is about affordable housing. This is the income group between 3,500 and 1,400. These, most cases, these are soft loans. And this was done with NHFC, which is one of our entities, one of our DFIs. So here we're only talking about mining companies. We're not talking about other companies because we haven't collected any information from other companies. But Andrew Clark, they have started this initiative. In fact, there is another program that they are busy with currently to take care of their employees. Other mining companies are only beginning to do something now. We've seen one last week give out a piece of land to the Russian minister, and they're also starting the rental housing project in consultation with the Shah Department of Settlements and ourselves. So, but Andrew Clark, they have also been in the pole position here assessing their own employees. The second question was breaking the loans by province and by gender. I think that's a very fair question. And it doesn't tell you much until you break it by gender, who are the beneficiaries, and in which by province as well. I think we can do that information. I don't have it with me right now. He can do it, all of his projects, the rental housing projects that he delivered over the last 4 years. He can tell you how many women the project we have benefited. We can break all those figures, but I left it high level for the purpose of this meeting. If we can take a decision here as a resolution to come back to you with that specific information, break it down by province, and that's the commitment that I can make.
Thank you.
So we will provide the breakdown by province and by gender. I think that's what you're asking for. The third question, Chair, is the grant to provinces. You're asking what mechanism do you put in place to monitor the performance of the provinces? You know, are you hand-drawn in terms of monitoring the performance of the provinces? One has to be very honest here about this particular item. I think the kind of monitoring mechanism that we have had in the past, that we have instituted in the past, was not more of what I would call a hands-on monitoring mechanism. We would sample various areas and we would go into technical midnight and we would have performance review sessions, we called down with various provinces and ask questions. We still do that. But the real performance monitoring means that you need to be on the ground in all of those 12 plus minus 12,000 projects that we have countrywide. We have about 12,000 active projects countrywide. And for us to be able to do effective monitoring, it means we must have a hands-on approach to look at each and every one of those projects. But we do have the housing subsidy system, which monitors in some terms of the payment, because we have to follow the money. If we don't follow the money, then the infrastructure will be very hard on us. So we do understand where the money is going. We know which units have been delivered to date. We track all of that, and NHBRC assists us because every unit that is delivered on the ground, it has to be enrolled as well. So we do have an understanding of what is happening in most of the areas. The biggest challenge in the sector, and I think Honorable Chair, you put this point very explicitly, that the biggest challenge is about planning. There are no shortcuts in the built environment. You have to plan all of your projects and package them properly. And that's why the question of township establishment, I think there was a question about the township establishment and all of those planning issues. And I've touched on this and I said it takes about 3 to 4 years to package and plan a housing program properly, or a built environment program properly. That's your 36 months of planning, your environmental approvals, your planning approvals, all your design, the township establishment, all of those things for a greenfield project. But for a brownfield project, it takes you more than that. It can take you up to 10 years, and that is an informal settlement program. And that is why you heard that concept of the formalization of the informal settlement because in, you have what they call in Kota, Imbatu, when people invade the land, and then they build shacks, and there are no services, there's nothing. So you have to come up with all of these various programs. First, put services at the basic. The basic starting point is to put the services there. They may vary, it may be chemical, toilets, may be all sorts of services, but you put the services so that people can be able to access some of those services. And then you gradually upgrade that informal settlement, if it's upgradable, because some of them is in the wetland. You visited Social Move, and there was a question about Orange Farm. I would know the specifics, but I would perhaps maybe go back to the department and find out about most of the specifics in Orange Farm. But my assumption is that this is an informal settlement, and we use the upgrading of informal settlements program or the in-situ upgrading program to upgrade the informal settlement. So I will come back with the specifics on that one, because I wasn't there. There was a question about GT. What is GT? I think my colleague Matifan and Beck will have to help us with this particular part. You meant to say GP, and this is Kauteng. GT is meant for Kauteng. The Winterfells, which is Tuane North area, floor planning there. The, yes, you're quite right. I think the bigger part of this exercise, I think the question came from you about the Winterfells and floor planning in the mud houses. The biggest headache in human settlements is beneficiary administration and housing allocation. If you are upgrading an informal settlement and you realize that your neighbor is being overlooked and somebody else comes somewhere to get the house, there may be a number of reasons for that. We don't know them. And one of them, it could be that that neighbor does not qualify for a house, and he got a house somewhere in another area. Or it could be that that particular neighbor earns more than 3,500, which is the threshold for getting a free RTP house. And there may be a number of reasons why he's being overlooked. We don't know those specifics. Or it could be that they've got a list, an area-based waiting list, where they prioritize people according to that area-based waiting list, which is very prevalent in KZN. Or in area-based development. When you have an informal settlements program, most of the people who are in the informal settlement are not in the centralized waiting list. So they are in what we call a project-based or an area-based waiting list. That's like the N2D3. All of the people that are benefiting from the N2D3 are people who are not necessarily in the city's central waiting list, because people who are still in informal settlements don't register in the national waiting list in some, in most instances, but there are those who are in the centralized waiting list. So there may be a number of reasons why this is done. Your proposal is that we need to adopt a phased development approach. You take an area, you relocate those people, and then you demolish those sheds so that you don't end up chasing your tail, because if you don't remove the shacks, you'll find that there are people occupying those areas where some of the beneficiaries are coming from. We have seen it in a number of other areas, including the N2D3, by the way, where people have been removed from shacks and they benefited. They were moved into a house, and then you have other new people who are occupying those houses. The same applies with backyarders, where somebody in the backyard gets a house somewhere, but the shack in the backyard is not demolished, so you have somebody else occupying that shack. So it becomes a moving target, what you are doing in the vicious cycle of a moving target. But a phased construction approach, a phased development approach, it works, because it gives you the complete control. In fact, that is what is happening right now in Joslovo, in Langa. And they're doing a phase construction approach. They take one area, they develop it, then they move the shacks into the house, and then they demolish the other area. You've seen it next to Vanguard, next to Missilman, and if you go there, that's exactly what they are doing. We've seen it in other areas as well in Gauteng, where they adopt a phased approach. If you don't adopt a phased approach, and you're chasing the moving target. I agree with you there. And that's about the management of housing allocation. It's also about the management of beneficiaries and managing the two as well, so that you don't create a conflict. Because if you're not managing that process, then the legitimacy of the allocation process is going to be questionable, and the legitimacy of the housing allocation process is also going to be challenged by the beneficiaries, and that will bring a lot of unhappiness among the beneficiaries. Accreditation of the metros, you're simply making a proposal here again that if you are accrediting these metros, you need to jack up your monitoring arrangement. The department has, for the first time, created a branch called Program and Project Management Unit, which is what I'm heading as a DDG. And that branch, the bigger part of that branch and that unit, is about managing the entire program from A to Z. It's about following the money, it's about performance managing the provinces and the entities. Tell them where they are not performing. I have monthly and quarterly meetings with them where I tell them why we should not hold the HODs accountable for poor performance in the provinces where they are managing. In fact, I'm not very much popular amongst most of the HODs, and so my team can attest to this because we manage them and we manage their performance as well. But we have to jack up that performance. We started gearing ourselves up so that we have teams on the ground. It doesn't make sense for us to disperse the money to 18 entities, and that is 9 provinces and 8 metropolitan resources, and not have ground troops who are going to monitor how the projects are performing. Because if provinces are not performing, the sector gets affected, and the National Accounting Officer will have to come to you and account for poor performance in the sector. So we've geared ourselves up, and I'm sure you've seen it in the media as well, where we trying to get as many professionals as possible, project managers, town planners, engineers who are going to help us to look at what is happening on the ground, because it's only a fair comment to say what we see on paper and what is happening on the ground are not talking to each other, because there's a lot of unhappiness happening in various provinces. But where we have programs and where we have projects and where we are funding those programs, we will be able to account properly because we will have teams operating in the various provinces. And we checked up our accreditation process. And there is a rule, a public finance rule, which says if you decentralize most of your functions, then you need to create a strong capacity at the center to manage the performance of those entities. It is a public finance principle as well, and that is why if you look at National Treasury has specialists and teams in every sector. They follow the money in every sector. They've got a unit they are called the Technical Assistance Unit, where they monitor very closely where the grant is going, where the fiscal is going, and they hold us, the sector departments, accountable. It's the same approach that the National Department of Human Settlements wants to adopt. Another fair comment from the Free State is breakdown of basic services by area in the Free State by municipality, especially the NASP. We can give you that information. We'll tell you which municipalities and which areas have been targeted over the last 3 years, and which municipalities are being targeted in this kind of financial year. We'll make note of that. I don't have a complete breakdown of which municipalities we're targeting in the first state, but the biggest budget is going to Mangaung, and they have used the budget, even though they have struggled over the last 3 years. I'm sure you've seen this in all the presentations, that they have struggled to spend the entire urban settlements development grants. The last year they underspent by about 128, but they've done an amazing job in terms of investing in bulk infrastructure. Those who are familiar with the town itself, if you look at Bloemfontein, the CBD, and you go to the airport, you'll see that there are some developments taking place on the eastern side as you go to the airport. But in order for the municipality to upgrade most of the services and to build most houses, the they need to invest in park infrastructure. They just completed a 35 megaliter reservoir next to Naval Hill, where the deep statue of the former president is. And that 35 megaliter reservoir is going to help them to deal with bulk sewer, bulk water supply, because you can't build not even a single house in areas where you don't have bulk water supply. So what they've done very well, they've put first things first, and that is investing in bulk infrastructure. There's also a good project there which will be launched, I think, sometime in November and December. It's a rental housing project called Brandwacht, which is managed by by Shra, the CEO of the Social Housing Regulatory Authority. So there are a lot of good things happening there, and I think they've managed to get the basics right. What they refuse to do is a dumping exercise. They prefer to go back to Treasury and say, look, we've understand about 100 million rand. This money is committed for these projects. Please give us a rollover. That's what they did last year. So there are a lot of things happening there. You ask a question, if they are now going to be accredited, does it mean they are going to do both infrastructure and housing? And the answer is yes. They will be doing both infrastructure, but you start with infrastructure, because if the infrastructure is not in place, you're not going to be able to build a house. You're not going to be able to deliver water and sewer and sanitation to those houses. So they've invested in basic infrastructure over the last 3 years. I'm just talking about the town of Mulong. But we will give you a list of all the other municipalities that are being targeted for the upgrade. The rental housing accommodation to prevent shacks and land acquisition, I will ask my colleague to attend to this question.
Thanks, DDG. Once again, good day, Honorable Members. On the rental housing project, because I think the slide showed that there was 80,000, the target was 80,000 units. I just want to clarify that 80,000 was broken into several parts. One being social housing, CRU, which is community residential units, institutional subsidies, and private sector. The numbers that we do not have are really from the private sector, where the NHFC is funding some private individuals together with another institution called Trust for Urban Housing. So I think that's the one thing. Now, we will meet the target in social housing. The issue with CRU, we should remember that the management of CRU then goes to the municipality. But the model of CRU is about cost recovery. You build, and you expect people to pay rental just to recover your costs. So it might not be a sustainable model going forward. That's something that we are still also looking at. On the institutional subsidy, that is where developments happen outside the restructuring zones. And of recent, we've had requests from rural districts that indicate that they have professional and public servants servicing a district, but not necessarily residing there. And we're starting to look at means of accommodating the need for accommodation there. And then it comes back to the question that was posed about whether can we supply more rental stock to obviate the problem of informal settlement. We are about restructuring South African cities, so we can supply more rental stock only if it is in well-located areas. Other than that, it defeats the purpose and it will become a slum. So then the program looks at if there is, what we need to actually do is to have a conversation between informal settlement upgrade and rental housing, so that we can, as it has been raised by the committee, some of the settlements are in bad areas, but some of the settlements are in a city or in city where something can be done about it. So it will be an issue of how we match the two. But yes, informal settlements, not everybody would want to own, even if we upgrade them, so we have to look at a different option of giving people another option to rent. And others also still want an option of rent to buy.
Thank you, Chair. The social housing program is one program that deals directly with the inefficient planning, spatial planning challenges that we have in this country. Spatial challenges that were brought about by the Good Areas Act and other pieces of legislation that created segregation of settlements. So it deals directly with all of those challenges because most of it is in restructuring zones, in well-located land, so that we can restructure some of the cities and create good planning and efficient spatial planning in most of our cities. And then the question about land acquisition, you ask this question, that people know how to build houses for themselves. All what they're asking for is to be given a piece of land so that they can build houses for themselves. Or they can buy a site and then build for themselves. Our programs do allow for this. The upgrading of informal settlements, for instance, in areas where you are upgrading an informal settlement and you realize that a beneficiary is not in a position to qualify for a house, that beneficiary will receive a certificate from government, but that beneficiary will not get a top structure from government because we have received a house before. So you can build a house yourself if you are already in an informal settlement. But if you want to buy a site somewhere, the FLISP, the Finance Linked Individual Subsidy Program, which is one of the financial instruments that we're using to accommodate the gap market, the market between 3,500 and 15,000. You can use that program to buy a site. You simply have to approach the NHFC or approach the province if you have identified the site already. And the assumption that we make is that you will be able to get funding for it and they will be able to process it for you. So the programs do allow us to allow people to get the site instead of getting the top structure. Maybe we're not communicating this properly to the beneficiaries, but the housing program is very flexible. It's one of the most flexible programs in the world because it gives people various options, various mechanisms. We have more than 18 different housing programs in the country which talks to different segments of the market, and that's why it is flexible. The defaulters, the question about what happens when they are defaulters, there will always be defaulters because the economy is not doing well. You take a loan now and you lose your job next week or next month. There are certain processes that have to be followed. But we also have an institution called SLAMDA, which is more about monitoring the mortgage loans that the banks are giving, so that we understand the size of the non-performing book, loan book in this market. We need to monitor that as well. But there are, you know, defaulters, and the banks, unfortunately, they have to follow the processes, all the required processes. And the reason why we introduced both these instruments, the FLISP and the MDI. The MDI is not in place yet. Recall the MDI was about the $1 billion that the President announced 2 years ago. It's not yet in place because of all of the mechanics of the model that Treasury is working on. That was intended to make sure that we manage that process, you know, of defaulters, where the banks will follow their proper processes, and where it becomes extremely difficult to recover the loan, then that part is insured. Well beyond the loans are intended to ensure the capital aspect of the loan so that people, the banks don't lose. And that's where the risk sharing arrangement comes in to deal with the defaulters. But at the same time, one doesn't want to encourage reckless lending, even in this particular market. Because if you encourage reckless lending, then you're not helping the situation, you're not helping the poor. You don't want to lend to the poor recklessly. That's the point. But we do have an institution, it's called Lambda, in full, right?
Lambda Home Loan
Mortgage Default Act. Yes. It's called Lambda because they help to monitor how banks are lending, so to speak, to the beneficiaries in this market. And they have to keep the Minister of Human Settlements informed about the performance of the loans in this particular market, that is from 2.5 to 15,000. That institution is up and running. It has a fully fledged board and the chairperson of the board. The experience in Orange Farm, I don't want to take chances here. I would want to look at the specifics and find out what are the issues there. But the comment was about the formalization of the informal settlements. And again, it's about managing the process of upgrading informal settlements. I said earlier that upgrading informal settlements can take more than 10 years in some instances because of all the nitty-gritties or the time-consuming activities that you need to deal with. The enumeration of the beneficiaries, the counting of the stands or the dwellings, the geotech assessment of the area, whether it's upgradable or not, because you have to make a call as to whether you want to upgrade that informal settlement where people reside or you have to move them completely to a new site. All of that work takes a lot of time, and that is why we started the National Upgrading Support Program to assist municipalities to manage the upgrading of informal settlements program. But we provide the services, we provide whilst people are there, we plan the upgrading so that everything is managed. And I used an example of Site C in Kaikicha, which was started in 1984, which was an informal settlement that started in 1984. Again, this question came back about service level agreements, say monitoring beyond service level agreements. You sign service delivery agreements with promises, but what do you do beyond this service delivery agreement? Do you go and look at what's happening on the ground? There are provinces that are doing well, that are managing the program, that are fully capacitated and managing well. The provinces that are struggling, and they've been struggling for some time. And that is why we're creating a pool of professionals, technical people, we can come in and assist folks. The biggest challenge, and assess the point, the biggest challenge in human settlements is about planning. Once the project is on the ground, the contractors are on the ground, it's easy to monitor that project because you already have a service provider who's doing the work. You simply monitor it and contract manage that service provider. But to get it on the ground, the 36 months or 3 year turnaround time in greenfield projects or up to 10 years in brownfield, that's the most difficult part, and that is why you need a pool of professionals who can assist you to package these projects, both the brownfield and greenfield projects. So that's where we're going. I think in the past, we have not been very much as well. I'm the first one to admit that in some instances our approach was a little bit transactional. Now we are being asked to get more hands-on, get on the ground, instead of just assessing and monitoring the work of the provinces. You need to give them all the support so that they can package and manage those projects themselves. Some provinces are endowed with resources, with professionals, with engineers, technical and regional planners, and other provinces are struggling to attract those specialists. Some of them don't come cheap. The lowest paid professional or project manager in ESCOM would earn around 900,000 rand, but the government, that's luxury that we cannot afford. So what we're trying to do is to use the buying power that we have in government, we manage the budget of 28 billion rand, to get these expertise cheaper, to help them in a pool of professionals that we can use to get the work done. And we always tell them that when they complain about our rich people, they show that the government rates are very low, and we say to them, at least you have a job, you have some work. Government is giving you work. You're better off than somebody who doesn't have work. But obviously, we stick within the money-oriented bands. And that's what we're trying to do. We help those provinces that cannot attract professionals, because some of them, they would prefer to go and work and chase lucrative contracts in Dubai, in Canada, and other countries. So we're in the built environment, we're in the scarce skill category where we deal with engineers, and they're not coming in numbers. You see, the universities are not producing enough engineers. And even if they do come, it's going to take them some time before they become professional engineers or professional town planners. So we're occupying in a scarce skill environment, in the built environment sector, but we're managing that by creating this pool of professionals to help those struggling provinces. There was a question about, you talk about all of these cities and all of these grants going to the urban centers. What about rural people? What about rural households? Chair, that question was raised by yourself. One of the grants, I think I've mentioned this, that if you look at the DFIs, let's start with the DFI, the funding, the loan funding arrangement. The RHLF, we call it RALF, Rural Housing Loan Finance Scheme, their money is to provide loan funding to rural households. That's their money to provide affordable finance to rural housing households so that they can build houses for themselves. But over and above that, you have this grant, what we call RIG, the Rural Household Infrastructure Grant. And this is about provision of sanitation to rural households. And then you also have the Human Settlements Development Grant. You're predominantly rural provinces like Limpopo and others. You will find that the biggest chunk of their allocation goes to their rural housing programs. I said in housing we have more than 18, or in human settlements we have more than 18 programs, and one of them is the rural housing subsidy program. So in Limpopo they use rural housing subsidy program to provide housing to rural households. So most of these grants, with the exception of urban settlements development grants, some of them are used in rural areas. Then there was a question about Wattville, Benoni. Or before we get there, you made a comment about informal settlements that are not upgradable. What do you do with people who stay in wetland, people who stay under pylons, people who stay next to railway stations? You have a lot of those. There's a place, I think, here in the Western Cape, next to the Denel piece of land called Enyumini or TR section. It's a wetland. And every year when it's raining in the Western Cape, you see that area is underwater because it is a wetland. And that is next to the station, Nankubela Station in Greenwich. You have a lot of those in Eastern Cape, in KZN, because of the topographic conditions in KZN. You have informal settlements that are in wetland. But where you have a wetland, the approach is simple, that we won't be able to upgrade that informal settlement. So we have to remove the people. And that is where the construction phasing in approach comes in. That you have to find first a piece of land, a piece of green serviced land, and then you must count the number of beneficiaries from that area where the wetland is, count those beneficiaries. If it becomes a challenge, that you may find that some of them don't qualify as you may find that those people who stay in that wetland, some of them don't qualify. And then the challenge now is how do you locate them? And those who don't qualify, in most instances, we give them a site elsewhere. And it's those people who don't qualify, in most instances, who tend to refuse or who tend to disrupt the program. So we don't want to move, we want to build here. and we want to stay here, build houses for us here. Even if you try and convince them that it is a wetland, they tend to refuse a relocation plan. So it is a very complicated program. It needs patience, it needs social facilitators. We need to have those specialists who are social facilitators to manage that program for us. But at the end of the day, people who stay under pylons and who stay in wetland and areas that are single, they have to be removed. It's good for their own health that they get removed. And we have no choice but to find another piece of land to relocate them. You have seen it as well in Pakistan. It's been on the news recently, where people have been moved from Pakistan in areas where they are single to Western area, which is where we're building houses. But that process of moving them as well is creating a lot of animosity, and I'm sure we can spend the entire day talking about Pakistan, which is one of our priority programs. Then there was a question about the funding constraints. I think the funding constraints are more about the rental housing program. We said part of the rental housing program is funded by private investors. Part of it is funded from the fiscals, the capital grant, and the institutional grant. So you've got this funding mix that talks to three various funding schemes. I'm quite convinced that we will overcome that program. In fact, if you look at, we've got a draft medium-term strategic framework which is going to inform the work of government in human settlements over the next 5 years, because we're starting the new term of government next year. We are upscaling this program. We're upscaling, we're continuing with it because we feel that it is a good program, the social housing rental program. But we're also increasing the funding, because we think that it's one program that helps us to deal directly with the legacy of apartheid planning. So it is a very good program for us, human settlements. So we will be able to deal with that. There was a question about Output 4. Output 4 is not performing. We're sitting at 336 loans when we targeted to achieve 600,000 loans. And the question is, what are the alternatives given that it's not performing? I think there's only one alternative to make sure that we push this target at this stage. And the biggest alternative is if the MDI, mortgage default insurance scheme, kicks in, and the MDI NDT, if it starts functioning, you will see that figure is going to go up significantly. And that is what the Minister of Human Settlements and the Minister of Finance are discussing right now, to agree on how we're going to manage this MDI. There were some concerns about creating a false incentive, if you like, or a distorted incentive for the banks, and they end up lending recklessly. So all of those things are being managed by Treasury. And Treasury are also very concerned about the fact that it looks like it's government who's insuring this, and which means it's going to be funded from the fiscals, from the taxpayers' money, the insurance part of it. So Treasury asked the banks to make a contribution as well into the insurance itself, so that it's a shared arrangement. The entity, the MDI entity, that we want to establish, the mortgage default institution. Private banks and government, they must all contribute into the establishment of that entity, into the capitalization of that entity. And that's what Treasury is pushing for, so that it's not only the taxpayer who pays for that insurance, which is intended to benefit both the private funding institutions and the beneficiaries. So those mechanics of the model are being discussed with the Treasury technocrats. The last question, there was a question about the L2 Gateway Western Cape, what is happening there. The L2 Gateway program started in 2005 by Minister Sisulu. And the intention, what Minister Sisulu wanted to do, is to pilot what was called the Breaking New Ground program, BNG program. You'll notice that we moved from a 36 square meter house to a 40 square meter house in 2005. and L2DT was used as a pilot to see if this new breaking new ground program is going to work. And part of it was about mixed type of development. So Minister Sisulu started talking to the banks, started talking to private developers, started talking to various institutions to try the breaking new ground policy, which is a very progressive human settlements program. So N2 was a pilot targeting the informal settlements along the N2 gateway. You can see all of them. They're still there, some of those N2 informal settlements, Barcelona, Krakow, Rosenberg. You see them next to the airport. Then there is Joe Slovo in Lange, and you can see in Joe Slovo certain things are happening. There is a portion, the FMB portion, which is vacant. And I think, Chen, you asked a specific question about those vacant flats next to the N2. The challenge there, again, was that particular portion was not planned for property. The city of Cape Town, they trying, together with the FMB, they trying to retrofit some of the processes there, because some of the houses, I'm told, were built on the servitude. So there were a lot of planning processes that didn't go well with the N2 gateway vacant portion. That is not, those are not flats, those are affordable housing units. And in fact, the FMB, the take-up, the 100% take-up of all of that, but they wanted to fix the planning processes. It's only one portion of the N2 gateway that the city and FMB are managing. It's an FMB initiative project. And next to it, we have BNG. You can see the Caterpillar and the contractor, the building there, upgrading the Joe Slovo informal settlements, which moves from the N2 side all the way to the Vanguard side, that belt of informal settlements as well. It's being upgraded as we speak. The 588 units have been delivered already, and they're now busy with servicing the other part, which is next to the SMB component. So that program is continuing, and it's going ahead, and it's being funded. They have concluded most of the precincts in Delft, because those precincts in Delft, they're part of the N2 gateway program. More than 6,000 people have been moved from backyards and from various informal settlements, and have been settled in Delft. Most of those precincts in Delft, we have about 6 precincts, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6. They have been concluded, most of them. So that program is moving. More than 12,000 people have been accommodated in this N2 gateway program since it started in 2005 under Minister Sisulu. Yeah, there was a question about the relationship with COPTA. What is your relationship with COPTA? Our relationship with COPTA is twofold. We have a program-based relationship with COPTA. There is first what we call the Program 9 and Program 8 delivery agreement. You'll recall that COPTA is responsible for managing MIG, the Municipal Infrastructure Grant. It's their business to manage and disperse the Municipal Infrastructure Grant to all the municipalities. But we benefit out of those Municipal Infrastructure Grant disbursements because some of it is used to fund housing program, and some of it is used to fund the servicing of various sites. So there is a relationship with COPTA. The second relationship is with sanitation. The three ministers, we have what is called the Troika, on sanitation. It is Minister Mulewa, Minister Tsinogi, and Minister September. They have signed a three-party agreement, which is intended to upgrade the provision of basic sanitation, both informal and informal settlements. And what they have prioritized is the eradication of budget sanitation in the country. And that's what the three ministers have committed to do. They have formed, they have constituted what is now called the IMC, the Interministerial Committee on Sanitation, Water and Sanitation. So we have a strong relationship with COPTA. We report to each other in terms of the targets that we have signed, both for outcome 8 and for outcome 9. So there is a strong relationship between the two, besides the fact that the three ministers meet on a fortnightly basis to discuss the sanitation, water and sanitation matters. On Betal and Zinoni, I won't be able to comment on this. I I think my colleague has commented on this. The hostel redevelopment program is now part of what we call the community residential unit. It's a very difficult program to manage, because if you're going to ask hostel dwellers, and some of them used to stay in what used to be called the male quarters, and now all of a sudden you are upgrading these old hostels, and you're asking the very same beneficiaries now to rent, to pay rent, and some of them are unemployed, it becomes extremely difficult to manage this program, which is why it takes forever, in some instances, to even conclude it. And you made a comment that some of the hostels are empty. And I can assure you that the biggest challenge is about the beneficiary administration part of it as well. Who qualifies will be able to pay, maybe the association are refusing to pay in some instances. So there's a lot of social facilitation that is required in the CRU province. And my colleague has responded to that question. There was a question about the relationship between the targets and your strategic plans. I'm assuming that here you're talking about the APP targets, or the strategic targets. The two are in sync, because remember, your outcome targets, you're not setting them outside your provincial business plans. It's the provincial business plan that we approve every year. DG Tabanizulu signs all the national business plans. And it's those business plans that give us the outputs from provinces. And those business plans, if they're not aligned with our strategic plans, our strategic targets, then we don't approve them. So there is a complete alignment between the strategic business planning exercise by provinces and the national outcomes as targets. We do this exercise on an annual basis. Every year, this year, there are certain business plans that we didn't approve. In fact, the Mpumalanga business plan was only approved in June because it was not aligned with our target. Limpopo, they experienced some challenges with their business plans because they were not ready to disperse as of the 1st of April. They had no contractors on site. Their procurement process was not followed properly in Limpopo. As a result, Limpopo will not be able to meet its targets this year. So we're very tight in making sure that the business plans from provinces are aligned with the national strategic plans and the national strategic targets. And that's the exercise that we manage. And if we feel that there is no alignment, we don't approve those business plans. And the same applies to the entities that we manage, like FRA. Those entities' business plans must help us to achieve these targets. So we have a complete alignment. NHBRC, SHRA, NHFC, their own strategic plans and their own annual targets are aligned to the departmental strategic plans. And there, Chair, we can give you the business plans of all the provinces. Remember, the outcome targets are funded from the HSDG grant, and those targets are in the provincial business plans. So if there's no alignment, then you're in trouble. I don't know if there's any question that I've left out, Chair. Please feel free to remind me. Oh, there was a question about the enforcement of the title deed. How many houses are affected in legal selling of RTP houses? And I think you asked that question emphatically. I tried to respond to it earlier to say you have this preemptive rights clause which says you are not allowed sell your house. You, government must have the first right of refusal. You bring it back to government first. And the enforcement of that is extremely difficult. That's number one. Secondly, the resources associated with administering the conveyancing arrangement, the few provinces that they have mastered this. But in some instances, you may find that people want to buy, even after 8 years. And the province must assist with all of those conveyancing arrangements. Because conveyancing in this country, and this is the study that we've done ourselves, that we have first world conveyancing, which doesn't necessarily help in some of our third world challenges that we have, especially in this market. Poor people who have gone beyond the 8 years of the preemptive rights clause How do you help them to sell their house when they want to sell? Those are some of the nuances that we need to deal with. In fact, there is a strong recommendation that we need to review Section 10 of the Housing Act, which talks to this particular item. And I think, Chair, I've covered most of your questions. If there is anyone that I've left out, please feel free to remind me.
Okay, before me comment further, I've raised the concern that I wanted to know, or no matter you tried to respond about the issue of the Cocteau and local municipality, but another question, because that question was loaded, to say, is your systems talking to each other? Because what local government is doing with, in terms of human settlement, you're supposed to know exactly. Then also, I wanted to know that what is the government wanted to achieve with these outcomes? Is it, and also I've asked that, is it achievable? Because it's how we're supposed to evaluate ourselves. That are we on the right track? If we are not on the right track, we want to change it. So honorable members, before further whatever, I don't know whether to have anything, because I realize that it's nearly time up. But if you have anything, because again, I wanted to remind you, ourselves, there is a set of minutes which are supposed to be adopted today. Now, I'll make it one, but I know that is true. And Mama Temba promised to come back. Do you have anything, Honorable Jacobs?
Yeah, Chair. I just want to pass the department. You know, on the issue of housing, there's so much underspending and rollovers, and that indicates that there is no proper planning. Because, and I wonder why all the time you allocate provinces money wherever they are underspending. Just like the treasurer will always raise the budgets of departments whereas they are in underspending. If I was the Minister of Finance, I would say I will raise that money by the time you are able to spend what I've given you. But all the time the department is underspending, but there is always an increase. And then, but the problem, as I said, it starts with planning. Because you can't build the house if there is no land, there is no infrastructure. I don't know when you are sitting, maybe your emphasis should be on planning first, to say the allocation must go for planning, for land, and for infrastructure. And then after that, then we can focus on the top structure. Because if we don't do that, there will always be underspending and underperformance. Just my comment on that. Maybe you have to look on that. Because right on issues of social housing, rental housing, that maybe it's easy, you can get the land. But this one for people to get RDP houses and the land itself. And the other one on the issue of land. I was saying, I don't say someone should acquire land and connect it with groups. What I'm saying, somebody must get a stand. He must decide whether I go to Flips, whether I go to a bank, or I build it myself. But we don't have to challenge the person to say, you are given this land, go to Flips and so on. So somebody has to make his own decision. So he must give that person that chance to make his own choice, his or her own choice. Yes.
Honourable members, let me propose this. The issue of this response, and remember, Mama Temba asked you the breakdowns and the comment. May you please send us those responses to the secretary, and also my concern, which I've raised, send it to the secretary. Because I'll put an example when I indicated to you. There are a lot of projects which we know that they are not yet occupied. While they are 2, 4, 5 years finished or completed. That's
people, instead of people are asking you, you said they are commenting on something else. Because we know our stories exactly. If you talk about sweet, we know we touch where to touch. If you talk about anything, like the thing which was raised by Honorable Member Jacobs, another weakness we realize is that some of these areas, like Winterfell, was former under Botswana, and it was given to Northwest. Northwest never did anything, and then Gauteng is trying to do something now. So we know exactly what is it. And then also our concern, that's why we ask whether the system are correct. You know, Jacobs, you raised a very, very sharp question about the issue of planning. There's this thing which is happening to our colleagues when they're doing their things on the local government. Because of negative planning or even failing to plan. For an example, they put a tar road, place people inside. After a couple of days, they come and dig the very same tar road. Put in stormwater drainage. Put in whatever. There in Winterfell, what we discovered, the way it was raised by Honorable Member Jacobs, here is a person, instead of demolishing all the mud houses and put them somewhere, they put a 1 meter distance. It's a mud house and there is a house. Instead of giving this person as a priority, they bring somebody from somewhere to put here. So these are some of the challenges which we're facing on the ground. So we can't allow the department being involved in such atrocities. We call it an atrocity because it's not accepted. So I think we wanted to say thank you very much and then believing that you'll send us some of these responses to our secretary so that we leave you. Chief, no. This one, no. I suppress it because we want to see minutes. I wanted to ask to talk about minutes before.
No, it affects all of us.
It affects all of us.
No, but I was saying the information that they will send to me as a citizen, they should send to all of us. Problem, not only
no, thanks. That is accepted. So we came to the end of our meeting, but next time don't send mails only.
Yes,
thank you very much. Yeah? I request members to remain. Let's continue with the meeting. Department, you are leaving. Honourable members, I'm subject to correction. We send you
PMT. Keep it.
I think we do have minutes of the 22. Wait, wait, don't panic. Chief, the priority is this. If must we drop it, then tell me. That's why I was summarizing so that we give you an opportunity. That's why I wanted to consult you. I don't want this thing to remain with me. PMG, you are released. Well, you are released. Yes, for this one, yes, you can leave. We're having two sets of meetings, but the other one of the 22nd.
now, we do have